We're doing the book of Kohelet, starting a new semester. We're up to what's called the sixth chapter. Shlomo Melech begins, Yesh ra'a asher ra'iti tachat ha-shamesh. There is an ill in society, something I've seen under the sun. V'rabahi al ha'adam. I've seen it among many people. It's very common, says Shlomo Melech. What's this ill? Ish asher yiten lo ha'elohim. A man that God grants him osher, wealth, unchasim v'chavod, assets and honor. So you have this man who's been gifted by God. Ve'inenu chaser lenafsho mikol asher yit'aveh. And he lacks nothing that he wants. Everything he wants, he has. Ve'lo yashlitenu ha'elohim lechol mimenu. And God does not grant him control to enjoy it. Meaning, what's it talking about? The simple understanding is that he's greedy. He's miserly. Oh, wow. That he has everything he could want, but God doesn't give him that serenity to enjoy what he has. So he can have everything, and this is terrible, says Shlomo HaMelech.
He can have one thing.
Come on. So Hashem, it's interesting that he blames God for this one. He says, God didn't give him the control to enjoy this. another understanding here is that God didn't give him the understanding to have control to really enjoy it. What does that mean? To do something productive with it. I mentioned the story here. We had a student here whose grandfather was a multimillionaire. And as he was aging, he said, I'm not leaving you guys all my money. We got to do something productive with it. And so he funded the research to discover the cure for testicular cancer. And he was successful. He took his millions. I mean, I'm sure he left something for all the grandkids, but the majority of his funds he invested in that. I don't want to say his name.
He invested in a lot of companies. He invested in Israeli companies, all the companies. The Americans, not Jewish?
Buffett,
okay.
A number of people who obviously were so blessed, thank God, do good works. This guy
was
one who happened to be here, I guess.
So, the other understanding is that that's what Shlomo Melech is talking about, that Hashem didn't give him that understanding to really take control of his assets by doing something worthwhile with them. And that's, ki ish nochri yochelenu, a foreigner ultimately consumes it, because someone else will take that money and put it to good use. This is a terrible thing. This is a terrible ill, says Shlomo HaMelech. To have a situation where he has everything and yet all that everything turns to nothing. So that's two understandings. There's a third understanding. And we're talking about a man who has everything, wealth and assets and honor. He's really lacking nothing, but he's lacking the long-term control.
You said it's interesting that he blames God. I also find it strange. He says, you know, you could just leave it at, and he has everything and he has no peace of mind. But he goes further than that. He says, and God doesn't grant him peace of mind. Like it's deliberately, you know, like God but made
God,
something
God
lacking.
God gives him everything.
And you pointed it out. And it's unusual. It's strange.
So, in the context, as we go through the psukim, we'll see one possible understanding is what some of the commentaries allude to this, that we create cycles in our life. We have a concept habali tahir. If someone comes and wants to purify himself, so then they help him from above. Hashem says, "You open the opening of an eye of a needle, and I'll open the palace gates." The idea is that we have to take some steps in the right direction, and then Hashem helps us to develop that direction. Sometimes it's not so overt, but here, you have a person who did not push in the direction of doing something really worthwhile with his money. So then it goes the other way. That habali tameh, if someone wants to destroy himself, he wants to defile himself, so then that's also a possibility. There are warning signs, and that's where Shlomo HaMelech is blaming Hashem, because it's as though Hashem helps him go down the wrong route. Hashem created a world where there's capacity to do that, and Hashem helps him tilt his heart in the wrong direction.
Hashem blesses him with so much bounty that it's almost like that the Huffet Chaim line, you know, this is somebody asked him, how you doing? And I said, okay, but a little more money wouldn't hurt. He says, how do you know? Because if you're not too happy, but you think when I win the lottery I'll be happy, that keeps you going. Maybe I don't know. You have enough to buy a few tickets. Once you win it, and you realize that I'm still unhappy, then you're really depressed. I guess. I mean, that's sort of the line that
you want more.
Well, but Rav mentioned it first, and it kind of sits on me that, and you've explained it now to a sense that he seemingly. Since he didn't utilize this in any proper fashion and he had the capacity to do so, then Hashem made sure maybe that he would still have the opportunity for tshuva or whatever by not making him satisfied. I don't know.
No, so it's the other way. That when a person becomes miserly, Hashem tilts his heart. There reaches a point where Hashem says, keep going. Hardens his heart, right. It's not only paro. Meaning Hashem keeps tilting a heart. There's a point, we saw this in the beginning of Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer also. There's a point where Hashem keeps waiting for a person to do tshuva, and there's a point where Hashem says, good riddance. Now you want to go that route, I'll help you go that route too.
But here it sounds like he's at the point where Hashem maybe said, but you could still reverse that, can't you?
You can always reverse it. But there does come a point where Hashem says, I'm not helping you. I'm going to help you go the wrong direction.
Okay.
That's part of the punishment. That's what the Rambam writes. Okay. Here, that's what the commentaries say, that Hashem doesn't give him that self-control to do it. He's going to have to work hard to get there. And part of what we can see here is that Shlomo might be referring to predispositions. You see it. You see it with your own kids. It's fantastic. You watch a child, and you can see as children develop, this kid is always watching what's theirs, is always trying to take control, and the other kid is always looking to give. And you just see it. You see it as kids develop. You see that they have different temperaments. There's a certain amount that you could do as nurture, but there's also a certain amount that comes as nature. And there's no way around it. We know we have different predispositions. So another understanding here is that God sometimes makes certain people predisposed to being very, very miserly. I don't know if the good fortune or bad fortune, to know a person who was very, 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 very stingy. I mean, the guy was extraordinarily wealthy, but he wouldn't buy a car, and he was wearing suits that were 30 years old. And I met someone who he was suing, who really should have sued him, he cheated the person in business, and then to add salt to injury, the person didn't want to waste his time. They were both old people. The person didn't want to sue him, and he sued the other person. He said, if he's that dumb, I can get more out of him. So I said to that person, I said, you know, poor fellow, he's such a miser, but I'm not sure we can judge him because he went through Auschwitz. So the other old person said to me, I knew him before Auschwitz. And it wasn't Auschwitz that did it to him. He was a cheat as a youngster too. And I always tried to keep a distance from him. And my father warned me as a kid, stay away from him. And I made a mistake. I didn't listen to my father. After Auschwitz, I figured we're all in this together. And I went into business with him. And now I'm paying the price. But it wasn't Auschwitz. My father warned me as a kid, as a teenager. The guy is a cheat, and the guy is a liar, and the guy is a miser. Wow. So people do have predispositions. Yeah?
So then if he was predisposed to always being a miser, isn't that also that you say, oh, I don't want to judge him because he went through horrors, but it's like made that way to be.
Right. So that's what I'm saying, that... Shlomo's saying it's a terrible thing. Look at how God created the world. You can have a person who's going to have everything and suffer with it. He's always going to want more. And God didn't give him the self-control to really enjoy what he has. Shlomo's complaining about it. He has free will. But at the end of the day, how many people use their free will to change their predispositions? It's a rarity. Most of us, we work within our predispositions. So that's what Shlomo HaMelech is crying about. He says, poor guy, he's got everything. Someone else is going to enjoy it. He's not going to enjoy it. Im yolid ish me'am. If a person has 100 kids, vishanim rabot yichyeh, and he lives a long life, the guy lives a millennium. V'rav sheyu yemei shanav, v'nafsho lo tisba min hatova. So a person is going to have a lot of honor throughout all this life. Sometimes you say, what's it worth living so long for? I heard this line twice in the last year, and it blew me away, where I commented that it's such a blessing today people can live to such a long age, and the kids of the people who live to a long age twice said to me, I'm not sure it's such a blessing. They see their parents really suffering. They're not enjoying the old age. Right, sometimes they're not healthy, and sometimes they're healthy, but they're just not interested. They've had it. I've seen so many people who reach old age and they're healthy, but they're not interested. Shlomo HaMelech says, if a man has hundreds of kids and lives hundreds of years, and throughout those years he has all the honor in the world, v'nafsho lo tisba min hatova, but he's never satiated of all the good he's had. So he has it as good as can be, but he's never satiated. That's what we're talking about. Vegam kivura lo hayeta lo. And then when he dies, he's...
He doesn't have a plot.
What? He gets eaten by wild animals. He doesn't get a normal burial. Amarti tov mimenu hanafel. Looking at a person like that, I say that a child that was miscarried is better than him. Even though his life seems to have been so good, no. You can't gauge life based upon how much blessing you've had in life. You gauge life based upon how much appreciation you have for the blessing you've had. Shlomo says, I look at it and I say, oh boy, what a world. You can have everything and suffer. Someone I needed a loan, their dude went on them, just before Pesach. So they didn't have hot water. And they have a bunch of kids, I think like 10 kids in the house. So I said to them, you know, I'll speak to some friends of mine and we'll put together a loan and you'll pay it off in the course of 6-12 months. So I see the guy isn't calling me back. So after a few days, I call him. I say, what happened? So he says, oh, you're right. I'm in the process of dealing, but the plumber can't come till after Pesach anyways. So I figured I'll get back to you a little bit later. So I said, wait a second, that's one plumber. There are other plumbers in town. Aren't you a little bit pressed? You have little kids? How are you guys showering? You have no hot water. So he said, well, we fill up the bath, and then we boil the water, and then we make a warm bath. So, you know, the kids, we manage. I said, isn't it tough? He said, yeah. I said, so why aren't you pressed to fix it? He said, I will. And I want the loan, and I appreciate the loan, but...
I don't want the money.
But... I grew up this way. I grew up with a bath that I needed to put in boiling water that I didn't always have the temperature I wanted and I knew it would go cold. And my kids never had it. And so they never appreciate a warm shower or a warm bath. And as hard as it is now, they will always look at a bath differently. So I'm not in such a rush. It's hard. It's hard on me. It's hard on the kids. But you know what? At the end of the week, they're going to walk away looking at a bath and hot water differently. So I'm interested in the loan. I was blown away.
That's being so mean?
Being so mean? I don't know if it's being so mean.
Right.
Shlomo HaMelech is telling us, you know what? A guy could have all the blessings, but if he's never satiated, if he spends his life thinking, I wish I had, there's that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow I'm always waiting for. then Shlomo says, I think had it been a miscarriage, he'd been better off.
It's good parenting if it's done with love. Yeah, my parents, just give them credit, they lived really well. They had, Con Ed had some problem, boiler busted 3 days. They started to get around to fixing it. They heard on the radio, they didn't call. Like 48 degrees, they were in sweaters. Yeah, they used to, that kind of thing. And I mean, they may be a little crazy if you can get sick and stuff, and this was when they were, you know, younger, but I look back on it, and I don't think it was necessarily bad parenting. I mean, you know, if you're talking about extended periods of time, kids getting sick, it's different. Anyway.
Now, if you look in Tanakh, this story happened in Tanakh. You have the king of Israel, Ahav. He has a ton of kids. He has a ton of wealth. We have a tradition that Ahav was so powerful that every king on the globe felt subservient to him. It says that he sent letters to every kingdom searching for Elio, and they all told him, we can't find him. So our sages say, why did anyone feel obligated to answer Ahav's letter? From here, Chazal infer that Ahav must have been so powerful that every king didn't want to get on his bad side. They all felt like he could take them down. So they all answer. They say, we sent out our secret service, we checked, and Elio is not to be found in our country. So Ahav has everything, but there's one little vineyard next to his house that belongs to Navos, and he can't buy it. He comes to Navos and says, can I buy your vineyard? And Navos says, I'm sorry, it's been in the family for years. I'm not giving up my family plot. And Ahav walks home so upset, he throws himself into bed, and his wife comes in and says, what are you so upset about? And he says, well, there's this gorgeous vineyard down there, and I can't have it. And then we know the rest of the story. The devil sets up a plot, and she frames Navos, and she has him killed, and then Ahav comes down and takes over the field, and then Ahav pays for it with his life, ultimately. But this is a description of Ahav. He's had everything. He has the kids, he has the wealth, he has the honor. He doesn't have happiness.
Yeah, oh. I was about to say.
He doesn't have happiness. So Shlomo HaMelech says, I look at that and I say, Tov mimenu anafen. A miscarry is better than him. Ki vahev ilba uvachoshech yelech. Because, you know what? If a kid's a miss, so then where'd he come from? Where'd he go to? He never saw light. Uvachoshech shemo yechusehem. So he didn't benefit anything, but he goes out in darkness and it's finished. But a guy like this, he's no different. Who's going to look back and say what a worthy person he was? He wasn't. Nothing's going to come of him. Gam shemesh lo ra'ah ve'lo yada. Here the question is he referring to the miscarriage? Or is he talking about the man who never appreciated anything? And you'll see that the verses can go in both directions. He never saw the sunlight. He never appreciated it. So that we're talking about the miscarriage. He never saw sunlight. We're talking about the person who never appreciated it. I did an interesting thing this afternoon. I try to do this once every few months. I sat down and drew up my schedule. What does my day look like from the minute I wake up to the minute I go to sleep? To look if I should tweak it differently. And I saw I have approximately 5 minutes that I wait for a ride. There are 5 minutes which are undefined by me. And usually if you have time that's undefined, so then you end up wasting that time. You might make a phone call, you might send an SMS. And I was debating with myself, should I allocate something for that time or not? Because I don't have any time allocated to look at the sunrise. I don't have any time allocated to breathe the air. And we're funny that way as human beings. We have so many senses and we're very limited in our focus. At any given moment, you have over 100, and I think it's over 1,000 sensory stimuli that are acting upon you. But you're not thinking about your right pinky toe as we're talking. You're not thinking about the sound of that clock ticking in the back of the room. There are so many things that are bombarding our senses that if we think about them, think of how much saliva you have in your mouth. You weren't thinking about that a second ago. You're not thinking about the hair in the back right of your head, whether it itches or not, your left ear, your right ear. We wouldn't be able to live. There's a mental illness when a person does think about more things than he can handle, and then he can't function. Because we can handle, I think, the range is between 7 and 10. You're listening, I hope, maybe, you're listening to what I'm saying, so that's one thing. And there are about and other six things in the periphery which you can handle thinking about. If you think about it, you'll notice. If you'll stop and think about it, you'll realize you're not thinking about your breathing, you're not thinking about the air you're taking in, you're not thinking about whether it's hot or cold. There are a million things you're not thinking about. Now, we have a choice, and that choice is very powerful. When a person can focus his senses, he can utilize that to neutralize pain. He can utilize that to develop love and appreciation. And a person can walk every day in the most beautiful park and not appreciate it. I remember when I first came to Israel, every morning I'd get out of bed, look out the window and say, I'm living the dream. This is Jerusalem. I just look out the window and get so excited. How could I start my day without a smile? Just looking and seeing this is Jerusalem. It's built. I'm here. I had dreamt about it for years. But you know what? The years passed. It's been a decade and a half. I don't remember the last time I got out of bed and looked out the window and was excited. And that the same is true over everything we have. We can get accustomed to having our health. We can get accustomed to having our family. We can get accustomed to being able to breathe and walk and talk to the sunlight. And we shouldn't get accustomed. Chazal say, the Medrash says, you want to know what a pious person is? That's a person that walks down the street, sees the sunrise, and says a blessing. Says, oh?
That's what I always say.
Every place I travel in Israel. Yafe. So, Shlomo HaMelech says, Gam Shemesh Lo Ra'ah. He didn't see the sunlight. That's what I asked myself, if I should partition those 5 minutes that I'm waiting for the tram to notice the weather, to notice the air I'm breathing, to have a little bit of appreciation for the life I'm living. We spend life running. We don't stop and think, hey, it's a beautiful day. Let's enjoy it. How do they call it in English? Stop and smell the roses? Yeah? Okay. And you'd be surprised.
Wake up and smell the roses.
You could add, that's wake up and smell the coffee.
Right, yeah.
I told you guys the story about the chocolate.
You know, it's interesting. You say when you lose it, you do appreciate it when you get it back. It lasts about a week. If you break an arm or leg, and you, when do you appreciate that first day or two when you get the cast off and you got? But somehow, the lack, you get used to it.
Yeah.
You probably know that from your dating advice stuff. You get used to the good stuff, and then you focus on the bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I told you guys the story about my friend who lost a child. I didn't tell you guys a story. I have a friend who's in the United States. He doesn't live here, but he's tremendously involved in Chesed. He keeps doing things to help other people. And we lost contact for a little bit when I made Aliyah. So after 3 or 4 years, we bumped into one another and asked him, how you doing? And he says, thank God, great. And we sit down to talk. And in our conversation, he tells me that in the last 4 years, he's been diagnosed with cancer. And he buried a child. And this is the guy telling me he's doing great. So as he's telling me this, he tells me, you know, after I lost that child, so I challenged myself. I said, when I walked back from, I don't remember the funeral or the hospital, I said to myself, there are so many things that God blessed me with that I never said thank you for. And I decided that I will not finish my Shemona Esrei on any day without stopping on Modim and thanking God for something I never before thanked Him. There are so many things I never said thank you for. I said, you know, I can focus on what I lost, or I can focus on what I have. And I've never taken the time to really focus on what I have. So ever since then, he says I'm a different person. Because every prayer I walk away with a new appreciation for something that I never said thank you for. So, Gam Shemesh Lo Ra'ah. Yeah, when a person can't have appreciation, he doesn't even see the sun. He can walk around and, yeah, the sun's shining, but what's that got to do with me? Yes?
I broke my ankle and I did physical therapy and I said, Hashem did 99.5% and I did the 0.5% to cure myself. And afterwards, I went in and I did a marathon, but I said I have to give back. I have to raise money for other people and give back. So I did that in the two marathons, and now I'm going to do something else. I'm going to do Kobe Mandel, the walk, 5 days. Wow. In the Shvile, the hills of Judea. And
wow.
That's not easy, but I love hiking anyways. But that's a challenge. But everything I do, I have to raise money for people, because I got a blessing from Hashem. Hashem made it that my ankle, I don't limp. A lot of people limp even when they break their ankle.
Yafeh. We're finishing Pasuk Hey. Nachat lazeh mizeh. Shlomo HaMelech says, Nachat lazeh mizeh. One understanding here is he doesn't discern between this world and the next. He just floats through the world and he skates through, but he doesn't really stop to think about the path he's on. And another understanding is he never has any nachat from anything he has. He never has peace of mind from anything. Ve'ilu chaya, and if he'd live 1,000 years twice, if he'd lived 2 millennia, v'tova lo ra'a, and he never saw good. What does that mean? That means he's going to have all the good, but he'll never enjoy it. Hallo el makom echad hakol olech. At the end, it all ends in the same place. Shlomo HaMelech here is driving home the point that he keeps driving home. One, do good with the blessings you have. Two, appreciate it. If you don't take the time to appreciate it, then it's all been for naught. Meaning, Shlomo's not talking about the world to come. It's a phenomenal thing. When he talks about doing good with what you have, then he's talking about the world to come. But Shlomo's philosophy and Shlomo's stress in the book is not only about the world to come. It's not only about being a good person. It's also, you have blessings. Enjoy it. So I think we'll pick up here Bezachim next time.